You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello there, it's David Baer, and you are listening to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. Today, I have the great pleasure of having a guest who has an amazing background in the medical supply industry, both as an inventor and investor. And we're going to talk about some of the other things that he's been involved in as well. But he's also the author of a fascinating book called Someday is Today. You remember those things that you really want to do at some point in your life, build out an additional element in your business or add a product or a service, and you keep saying, well, I'm going to do that someday. Well, his whole perspective is just do it already, and he's going to show you how. So I want to thank and welcome Ron Richard to the show. Ron, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. So we were chatting when we first started recording a little bit about your background. You want to give us a sense of sort of the breadth of things that you have been through in your professional career?
Sure. Yeah. I actually was pretty blessed. I got to start my medical career working as a respiratory therapist and a paramedic in a teaching hospital. And that's where I first encountered patients who had all kinds of different needs that were on ventilators and had respiratory problems. And that was actually where I had my very first invention, which was a simple communication board that could help patients communicate with their family or with staff members. So the hospital actually helped me fund a research project. And from there, I invented and developed the Speakeasy communication board, and it went on to sell about 500,000 units worldwide. So that was how I got kind of started in the invention business.
Well, that's crazy. And I imagine that you were not really thinking that when you got started, you were just trying to solve a particular problem. And,
exactly. Yep.
And then just things grew from there. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really the premise of the book. I see, based on my own experience firsthand, that clinicians, doctors, nurses, therapists who work with patients, they have great ideas, but and they would like to help patients and they'd like to improve on products, but they don't know how to get started.
I heard this really interesting definition of entrepreneurship once, which is solving problems for profit. And I think that's pretty much what you just described, is that you saw a need, you tried to figure out how to solve it, and ultimately it became its own entity, its own business almost. Yeah. And I think you point out correctly that a lot of businesses, whether it's in the medical field or any other, have their head down around the thing that they do, that they know how to do. And there might be this opportunity that you've discovered how to realize something, right? That that they're not well versed in kind of what to do about it. So how is it that you found yourself moving from that initial project into a place where you were really, creating more things and becoming an inventor rather than the clinical technician and paramedic that you started as?
Yeah, well, going back to that story and how it led to where I'm at today, essentially, I got connected with a manufacturer that licensed and bought that product and sold it through their sales and distribution. And I became good friends with the CEO, and subsequently I left the hospital and got into selling medical equipment. Then I opened up my own home care company, which I ultimately sold that. I also owned and operated a chain or series of sleep labs. And that's how I got into understanding sleep medicine and respiratory kind of combined. But through my journey, I also worked with Fortune 500 companies in product development, business development, reimbursement. So I was able to learn a whole scope of things, not just here in the U.S., but I was lucky enough to be able to work overseas for many years in Australia, Japan, and in Europe, too. So I got to see globally how healthcare was being put together, but it also gave me great contacts and exposure to clinicians and physicians who I thought had great ideas, but again, didn't really know how to get their products to market. So the subtitle on my book is Get Your Ideas Out of Your Coffee Cup and Get Them to Market. And I was invited about 3 years ago to do a lecture at Stanford. I was invited through the dean of the business school. Actually, it was contacted by the head of several of the medical departments to come out and give a one-hour lecture on basically product design, product development. I've launched over 50 products in my career, and the sales of those products have exceeded $1 billion now over the last many years. So I did the talk, and I was approached by several of the physicians. And I kind of noticed there was a pattern or a theme. One is frustrated doctors want to get their ideas or products on the market. But one doctor actually said, I can't get my idea out of my coffee cup. So I kind of stole the subtitle from him. Mm-hmm. And I said, really, what's that like? He goes, I'll sit at my desk in my office and I come up with these great ideas about things I want to do to help patients. And it just kind of sits there in my coffee cup. And then I had other doctors saying, I want to get passive income. I don't really have much control over my life here in the hospital. I'm an employee here. I work 8 to 5. I work hard and everything. But I would like to figure out a way to have a small company or a business or an invention that can afford me to have some passive income. And then the third category was doctors and clinicians who were very altruistic. They wanted to do something good to help people. That's why they got into medicine or medical school or whatever. And this is just a continuation of their, you know, passion for helping patients in medicine. So again, that's, you know, kind of the background behind the book and my career.
Excellent. I one of the things that stood out to me was the chain of sleep labs that you owned and ran. And was this the sort of the first time that you were running a service operation as opposed to equipment that was being sold? How did you find yourself in that position, and to whom were you promoting or selling or marketing that service? Was it just to referrals, or was it to the general public? Who were you promoting to?
Yeah, when I had gotten involved with that company, we were promoting our services, sleep studies and sleep consulting and all that, directly to the public. And so from a marketing standpoint, we were very strategic because we approached it from the standpoint that we knew that there were unhappy, we'll call them women or wives that were sleeping in the same house with somebody that was snoring and keeping them awake. So we specifically targeted that audience through daytime TV shows. And we were the first company to actually do national broadcasts of the problem with sleep apnea, and there was a solution for it. So we marketed directly.
You said TV shows as opposed to ads. Was this more of like an infomercial or what? Yeah.
Yeah.
And just for those who are listening, who are curious about why did you choose television and why daytime? And can you sort of just walk through that logic there?
Yeah. So from a marketing standpoint, we thought the best way to present this issue, which is pretty common and well known in terms of snoring and how it keeps people awake and the problems behind it, was to do it on a TV commercial, you know, a short, less than 1 minute commercial, again, targeting women that were watching TV during the day. Typically, it was the daytime Price is Right, or it was daytime soaps or things like that. So again, we were one of the first companies. We grew from 10 labs up to 28 labs within about 5 years, and then sold that company for $45 million.
Wow. So interesting, we were talking about sort of, you know, how do you target a particular market in general just before we hit record. And this, you know, is a great example of how you really are aligning your message to a specific audience to solve a particular problem and getting it in front of them in the right place.
Right. Being more strategic and then getting into the tactics, because, you know, advertising on TV back then was fairly expensive. There really wasn't a lot of cable or social media like Facebook or whatnot. So whenever we would run commercials, it literally cost thousands of dollars to do them nationwide. So you had to get the strategy nailed down first, and then work on the tactics in terms of the back end and getting a patient set up, getting them, you know, information packets sent out and all that type of stuff.
So this is an interesting thing because you're going direct to consumer, but a lot of the projects that you've worked on, particularly in the medical equipment area, you're not selling to consumers, you're selling into an organization, or you have to present just like, you know, pharmaceutical reps do, you have to present the equipment to docs at, you know, while they're in their office between seeing patients and all of that sort of thing. Can you talk a little bit about how that marketing process works?
Well, traditionally it was through trade shows where doctors would be getting continuing education credits, but also visiting, you know, booths and vendors about what's the latest new technology out there. When COVID hit, that all changed to doing virtual trade shows. It also changed up to where now I develop a lot of digital assets and targeted mailing that's pretty strategic in terms of looking at an audience, figuring out, you know, what they're reading, what they're looking at, how they're, because they're still wanting to get education. Mm-hmm. They're still wanting to learn about new products. But in this day and age, it's been difficult to send a sales rep like you did in the past to go visit a doctor or a therapist in a hospital because of the COVID guidelines. Mm-hmm. That's changing and starting to ease up. But it became, you know, where we had to pivot and really change our strategy in terms of how we contacted, connected with the various clinicians in the marketplace.
You know, a lot of industries have decided that they're going to adopt a lot of the things that they've learned over this past year and add them to their regular routine or shift completely to this regular routine. Are there things that you think that you'll be able to continue doing that you've done during COVID?
I don't think Zoom meetings are going to go away. In fact, the feedback we're getting from clinicians, if the product's simple enough to understand via Zoom presentation, they actually like it, doing that better than probably arranging a schedule and having a physical visit from someone. It's more efficient time-wise for them to probably hop on a computer and get a demo that way. But there are cases where there's a product I'm launching right now that's it's a high flow therapy device that's used to treat COVID and COPD patients, where the hospitals say a Zoom is a good way to get our, you know, kind of whet our appetite or kind of see the product, but we do want to try it and you're going to need to show up at the hospital, show us how to operate it, how it functions, kind of go through the, you know, ABCs on the product and let us use it for a week and also be available either via Zoom or phone call if we have a question. So that part of it's going to kind of stay the same, but yeah. The difference in what I see happening is the utilization of Zoom or connecting via digital media, Google or whatever you want to use is going to be around to stay.
Does this give you access to people who are farther away to be able to sell more without the travel or yeah?
It definitely, I can see it's going to cut travel costs and expenses and time because there's probably going to be cases where instead of wasting your time flying around doing demos, yeah, which we used to do a lot, just hop on a plane and just took it for granted that we were going to travel somewhere. I see that part of it. In terms of the efficiencies and cost savings and time and things like that to be something that we're probably going to embrace and continue to do in the future.
So if let's go back to the book and the content of the book and why you wrote it in the first place, for a lot of doctors or people in the medical environment who have this desire to either add passive income or an additional sideline, this unfortunate period of time has actually probably made it easier for them to be able to do that because they don't have to spend as much time or energy, you know, doing the road warrior thing or finding people who can to be able to build out that new opportunity, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. And my wife's a physician. And one thing I've noted over the past year, she doesn't drive into the office as often as she used to. She can actually see patients from our home office and do more telehealth, telemedicine consults. So it's really improved her quality of life instead of spending time on the road driving. She can actually see more patients and have more meaningful discussions. I think, you know, the part of the book that's helpful that I've gotten feedback from physicians is it kind of gives them a game plan to kind of look at the key elements of starting off the process of kind of putting your framework around an invention, and then all the different key elements that go together, everything from funding, financing, forming your team, who's the key team members, how to be a leader in a company, you know, versus being a doctor, where you're kind of telling everybody what to do. You've got to figure out a way to communicate in a different way with engineers and with, you know, people that are in marketing and sales. So that's a lot of the different elements of the book, and the feedback I've gotten so far has been very helpful.
I imagine that there's also elements of vetting the concept or doing some sort of validation. And then the same thing with the bringing it to market in terms of research and validation. Can you talk about those two parts of the process?
Yeah, that's the first thing you mentioned was the validation. And in the book, I actually asked this question: does my product have a right to survive in the ecosystem? And why does it? And try to write, you know, a 30-second elevator pitch about what it does, why it's better, because that's what you're going to be doing, is presenting to investors, unless you're going to self-fund it. So essentially you go through that kind of part in the book, and then it transitions into spending time and money making sure you do a thorough patent search, so that when you get to market, and I give some examples about projects I've worked on where they've actually gotten launched, got to market, they didn't do a good due diligence search on the patent side of things, launched the product and were contacted by another manufacturer that had a patent and actually got sued and taken off the market, and they lost millions of dollars.
And how does that work? Is it you go to a patent attorney who really knows how to navigate that process? Or
I've always worked with attorneys that specialize particularly in medical patents. So they know exactly the search terms and how to do the searches for you, and also how to draft the patents. If you're going to go forward with your product, you got to decide, you know, what type of IP, intellectual property, you're going to apply to the patents. So it's important that you hire the right attorneys. You can't hire an attorney that specializes in doing trusts or in divorces. You know, you want to find somebody that's got a great experience with writing up patents and also doing searches for medical devices or pharmaceutical types of things, you know. So, and it's well worth the money to spend on that. That's the very first stage in the process, because you don't want to launch a product again that you get to market and then you get a tap on your shoulder from another law firm saying, oh, guess what? You infringe. Mm-hmm.
There's clearly a common nomenclature around those types of things, and if people understand the right language to look into in terms of what already exists out there, to make sure that they're not stepping on somebody else's toes.
Yeah.
So that's the initial validation and research that you need to do, and then when you bring a product to market, you got to figure out all the things like positioning and how do you sell it into the right place and all, and who are the decision makers and all of that. What's your advice on that front?
Yeah, part of the book too, in that case, I really advise people to do focus groups with both end users, with clinicians, anybody that's going to touch the product and have an experience with it. It's well worth spending some time trying to frame up what it is that the user experience is going to look like or be like. And as in a parallel to that, what you probably want to do is find a prototyping company. If you have a product, you want to build prototypes that people can actually see, touch, unless you want to do three-dimensional drawings, which are easy to render up as well. So that's a little less expensive than a prototype. But sometimes you have to have, you know, something that people can touch, feel, take apart, you know, kind of look at it and say, oh yeah, I understand how this works. So that's a part of it that you can actually do in parallel while you're going through the patent process.
It's interesting. So you're really talking about knowing how a decision gets made, and knowing that in order for them to decide, yes, they may need to have some, you know, tangible representation of this, or the ability to move it or twist it or whatever it may do in order to help inform that decision. How do you determine what those things are that somebody needs as you're figuring out how do we go out and sell this? What are the clues that you look for, or the feedback that you get from people so that you know how to approach them with the sale?
Yeah, I think the beautiful part about the book is it really connects the clinician to their personal understanding and their hands-on kind of dealing with patients and with products. And there's no perfect product out there, but if a clinician looks at it from the perspective of, if I did the following things, then this probably would happen and be a better product. It would make my life easier, it'd make clinical outcomes better, so on and so forth. So that's where the beauty of the mind of a clinician and how they see how things work and how they deal with patients can be a huge driver, because the flip side of it is a manufacturer that makes products, they typically go out and they find doctors or they find clinicians, they hire them as consultants, and they say, you tell us what you think we should build, mm-hmm. and we'll make that. Versus the clinician says, well, I already know what I would build. I know what I would make. If I just knew how to get there and the steps that I needed to take, I could make a better product.
And in both of those scenarios, there is a clear vision for what is needed in the market, which is a major contrast to a lot of businesses that might create something because they think they have a good idea, they build it, and then they go out and try to figure out how to sell it without validating the actual need for it. So yeah. I think those are very, very smart approaches.
Yeah, you don't want to take what I call the field of dreams approach. You know, build it and they will come, or build it and they will buy it. You know, as part of the book too, the process is, you know, like I'm a big Philip Kotler fan. I love him as a marketing guy. You know, he always talks about price, promotion, product, placement, you know, those four P's. And that's kind of woven in throughout the entire book. So you know, there's these little steps that I call confirming that you've planted a seed because you saw a need and you're actually nourishing that seed, and it's going to actually grow and flourish at some point, become a product that's not just sold probably in the United States, will be sold all over the world and help millions of patients.
No, I love the imagery of that as well. That's great. So, you know, my clients, particularly because I lecture them all the time, but our listeners here as well, know that taking a strategic rather than tactical approach is the thing I advise. And you've been talking about the folks you work with and the types of projects and products that you're working on really need to have a framework and a structure and a process as part of it, rather than taking a tactical knee-jerk, I wonder if this is going to work kind of approach. There's really some thought that goes into where I am now and where I want to get to and what are the appropriate steps along the way.
Exactly. Yeah. The strategy is now becoming more important than ever. It's not as easy to get products to market anymore. And I tell doctors this too, and they understand it. Back 20, 30 years ago, there were hundreds of companies you could have actually pitched your product to. But over time, the market has gotten so consolidated because these big, huge Fortune 500 medical companies, they're going out and they constantly are buying up smaller companies. So the inventor or the inventions have fewer and fewer places to go or be pitched to. And when you get into that ecosystem of trying to pitch something to a Medtronic or to a Vyer or a Philips or, you know, these mega billion-dollar companies, it's a long, long process before you actually can get to the right decision makers to either fund your project, do a licensing deal, or get bought out. So that's a little frustrating. That's why inventors oftentimes, you know, they take it upon themselves to fund their projects as an incubator initially, and then somehow or another figure out, do they want to go to the market under their own brand and their own, you know, website or whatever, Salesforce, or do they want to do a licensing deal with a bigger company?
It's fascinating. Because of these large organizations, you have to know how the purchasing and how the decisions get made. And I guess, you know, there are many large organizations where they kind of let individual divisions or individual locations make their own decisions. But I imagine that's not very common these days, that they want to have control over cost and consistency and other things.
Exactly. You know, and the part of the book too that I caution inventors on is projects can become like a riddle of how long's a piece of string. You know, you get started on it and then it takes all these different twists and turns, and you know, you can get distracted by what's the next shiny object in terms of how you're going to market or sell your product, which costs time and money. So, you know, you don't want to get into a money pit. You know, I call it, you know, the thing of you're either going to make money or you're going to be involved with a money pit, and you're just going to constantly just put money and millions of dollars into projects that may never get to market.
And I can't imagine anybody wants that fate. So, well, great, Ron. This has been fascinating in terms of understanding how to create something new, to validate it, to bring it to market, to deal with all of the peculiarities of the particular industry that you specialize in, and the challenges around the selling process. Anything else you want to add before we wrap things up?
No, I think, you know, I really appreciate you inviting me on to your program, and I enjoyed talking with you today. And, you know, I hope that, you know, people that read the book can help them create a game plan and a strategy to get, you know, from the coffee cup to a product that actually hits the market.
So if somebody is interested in the book, where can they find it and where can they find you?
They can find the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's via Kindle, or, you know, you can download a digital copy or buy a physical copy of it. And you can find me on my website on inventingstartstoday.com.
And the book is called SomedayIsToday.com. Today. And you can find links to the book on the website as well.
Exactly.
Great. Ron Richard, thank you so much for taking time to share your insights and your story with us. And I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation after this recording. But in the meantime, I want to thank our listeners for hanging out with us and giving us the opportunity to spend a little bit of time in their world. This is David Baer, and you have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Have a great day.
Thank you.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. For a collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, please visit getdavidsgift.com. That's getdavidsgift.com. Once again, thanks for listening to More Perfect Marketing.